The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And I'm live at location at a place, honestly, I didn't think I would ever be doing an interview at. I am at Lely, a very famous Niagara-on-the-Lake winery, and I'm joined by the owner, Matt Faik Turkman. Matt, thank you so much for doing this today.
Thank you for visiting us.
Yeah, and back when I was studying to become my diploma for WSET, we came here. This was many, many years ago, like 2013, 12, somewhere around then. And I remember standing in these vineyards, and I was poured a glass of 100% Cabernet Sauvignon. And I'm like, this is going to be, in my mind, I'm like, this is going to be horrible because I hadn't had many 100% Cabernet Sauvignon in Ontario. Just, you know, the temperature, it's underripe, it's green, it's herby. And I remember drinking it and I'm like, why do I like this so much? And it was explained about how good the vineyard management was and the microclimate. And there were certain pockets. I loved Lely. For a long time, I loved Lely. And then the original owners sold, the new owners tore stuff up, and it became, you know, more cheaper Vidal ice wine that was sold overseas. And I remember being so bummed out about Lely, and now I'm so excited to hear about the changes. And let's start here. What made you decide to buy Lely back in 2021?
That was a combination of where we were at the Stonebridge project and luck and COVID. Literally, we were working with Peter Gamble and for 6 years on Stonebridge. We had the ambition of producing high-end Niagara wines, which are cellared properly, and we weren't rushing anything. When we hit to that time zone, we were ready to bottle. We were ready to think about how to sell. And we had a project to build a winery at the Stonebridge property. Mm-hmm. And COVID happened. Everything started falling apart, supply chains. And we couldn't really break the ground, even though all the permits, approvals were in place. After 6 months, I start getting nervous because we were missing the deadline and the regulations of Ontario isn't that flexible when it comes to if you are delayed on your winery, you might be in trouble kind of thing. So Lely came to market, somebody helping me out and trying to find a storage space for barrels said that, hey, I mean, it's not a solution to your problem, but this is an interesting asset. And I talked to Peter. He got very excited, saying it's a premier location, he's been involved. And then I met with Donna and David, and I fell in love with the winery before seeing it. I saw how much passion was still there, mm-hmm. with some frustration, and as you mentioned about how it went after they sold the property.
Yeah.
And I also met with Derek Barnett, was working with them. And the idea was, I mean, I always trusted on the teams delivering projects quality. That's how Stonebridge came about. And I thought, those three wonderful people, could they do anything wrong? I mean, if you look at them, they were still passionate about what they did, and they really encouraged me to go forward. And I asked Donna's permission to use the name if the deal goes through. She was thrilled, and I was thrilled as well. Then we put the offer. I think they were ready to sell, and we were ready to buy. It happened everything in 5 weeks. Mm-hmm. And I was in front of the Lely with the keys, and Donna also showed up to give me a big hug, saying that you'll do wonderful, darling, attitude. And I said, oh, my God, I bought an iconic winery. It's like, it's not a piece of property. It has character itself. Regardless of how good or bad you treat, I think a property like Lely, it will prevail. I mean, it has its own character, own history.
Yeah, and that's why so many people in the wine world, so many people in the Ontario and the Niagara wine world that loves this area, we all loved Lely. And then when it was sold in 2015, all our hearts sunk. And I had no idea about you, and I want to hear more about your journey, and of course everything was Stonebridge. But for people listening, when I heard that it was sold, and that people like Ann Sperling and Peter Gamble, and Ann's been on the podcast, and Peter Gamble will be at some point. He's a great, they're both incredible, incredible winemakers, that they were coming on board and you were involved in it. Like, I got really excited. So let's hear, I'd like to hear a little bit more about you and about Stonebridge as well. What is sort of your background in wine? When did you get involved?
I mean, I'm coming from a farming family, but right. I, again, am the first generation of people who were sent out from farming to do something else. And I was a management consultant in banking and telecom industry, which meant I traveled a lot, work on different countries, while the rest of my family is involved in farming here and there. I had a small pet project for winery with a couple of my friends in the past in a different country. When we moved to Canada, obviously, I need to left that venture.
Where was that, by the way? Where?
It was in Turkey at Dardanelles, where the big war happened. It's a well-established wine region now. And the brand is Sula. They grow to be a very, very large, successful business. After I left, obviously, they are in a very nice part of the world. Climate is much more forgiving than Niagara. But Niagara turned out to be our happy place. When you move to a different country, you don't have your network, you don't have your friends, and you don't have lots of things to do over the weekend as a family. And we made a point that we travel, and it turned out to be that most of our travels were heading to Niagara back and forth. Mm-hmm. My wife was very supportive, and at the time I lost my mother, and she always said, don't waste my money. I saved it a lot. You have to buy a land. You have to buy a land. And there were multiple things coming. And one day I saw a gentleman putting a sale sign on a property. 3 days later, I called my wife saying that, honey, I bought a vineyard. That's how it happened. And,
hold on, wait. Did she know ahead of time you were going to buy the vineyard?
No, she was encouraging. She was saying that we should buy.
Right.
But still, like, for 6 months, she was very, very supportive.
So, yeah.
Wonderful. We have to build a house. We have to do this, do that. But winemaking, especially if we want to do it seriously, start from vineyard, a lot of work, and it has to be built with patience. You pick. It took us 2 years with Peter back and forth discussing what to plant.
What year was this?
It was 2014 I started. We start for our first harvest 2017. Mm-hmm. We had a bit of a very small part planted. We pulled some, we rehabilitated some, and at the same time we knew exactly what we want to plant. 17 and 18 were very small harvests for us. I kind of wanted to test whether what we were doing is going to lead to something nice, even though you have all the wonderful people around you. You can't control the nature. Nature
right.
could give you something you don't want. And I did not want to produce any wine. I want to produce something that could be at par with Burgundy Chardonnays when I started, and some right bank reds. That's what we tested. And 17 and 18 gave us a very good indication. Then we gone and full production on 19. The more I spent on the field, the less time I spent spending on the Toronto banking and telco area. In 2020, I said this requires full-time attention, and I switched all of my time.
And that, the Stonebridge portfolio, and we'll talk about that. We'll definitely get back to Lely. I'm sorry that I'm making a bunch of this interview about me, but for years I always pointed to Lely as being, okay, they can make Cabernet Sauvignon, or that land can actually make it. And so to me, again, I'm thrilled to be here, because I'll be honest with you, Matt. When I first got the message about, hey, would you be interested in coming down to Lely? I didn't read the whole message, and I didn't know what was going on. And I'm like, I don't want to go. I don't want to go and see them. I don't want to go. My wine heart is broken. And then when I heard about all the news, I'm like, I will drive there for at 7 a.m. just to be here. But let's go to the Stonebridge. I was wondering if you could talk about the Stonebridge portfolio.
I mean, we could stay at Lely. I mean, what you are saying is close to my heart as well. I mean, I did not live through the broken heart section.
Yeah.
But I understand the full impact. People showed up after. I mean, Donna is great. David is great. They walk back. I think on the town, told that there's a new owner. He's like us. I mean, they really supported us on the psychological side. People start coming and visiting, and we were seeing all this frustration, saying that how did that happen, and what are they literally interviewed us over and over again. Tell us about your wine philosophy. What do you do? Eventually, they keep coming back and saying, well, you're doing something that you should be doing. Mm-hmm. I mean, what we did at Stonebridge was no different than what ladies were doing, maybe 40 years apart. And if you think about their time, VQA wasn't established.
Yep.
I'm not sure whether GGO was in full force at that time. And nobody had really more than a couple years of experience with vinifera grapes. So they were first to plant. And on this small plot of land, they planted 17 varieties. And they keep experimenting, pulling one, putting others. And now what we are doing is, after 50 years, using their knowledge and experience on our replant program. Because now we know Syrah doesn't work on the front part of the property. It's a 1 kilometer deep property, but we have two separate distinct appellations in addition to 7 different soil types here. They're now telling us, I mean, Donna was here when we put our first replant Cab Sauvignon. I mean, she said that this is the right place. That block carries her name now. It's Donna's block. Mm-hmm. And we would be most probably planted the Cab Sauvignon on a separate location. I'm 100% sure. I mean, if you don't know the history, you will make those mistakes. And she told us, this is good, this is bad. I mean, we looked at GGO records. That goes back 18 years in full detail. It shows how much crop is coming from here and there. And you have Derek Barnett still, his heart is with Lady. We're asking him, and he's telling us, we tried that, don't try this again. Because not all those 17 varieties are fondly remembered by the winemaking team at the time. So Lady focused on whatever the land gave, and they tried to do as little intervention as possible. They experimented with intervention. They used Canadian oak, which worked for some wines, which didn't for others. They tried taking Chardonnay, barrel fermenting, still fermenting, various different methods. It wasn't like they did same thing over and over, big success. They're telling us they had really big disappointments, but they learned, but they stayed true to their origin. They never bought wine and say, this is coming from our sister winery kind of thing. And we were doing that. I mean, we are selling a lot of wine at Stonebridge before this time, and Lely will do the same. If it is not up to the standard, instead of blending into some big batch, we say that we will produce something that we are proud of, and that's what motivates our sales team as well. They're proud of every single wine we sell. Hopefully, in 2 days' time, we'll be releasing first big batch of Lely wines coming from this property. We only had Rosés until now, and Zweigelt, and there will be a Chardonnay, a field blend. They're all coming, and we're all excited about that. And I kind of feel very happy I'm taking the first bottled case always to Donna, saying that, hey, this is what we did. And she's always supportive. I hope that she really likes it, because she always said that that's wonderful, but I know that she has a big heart. She will always encourage us.
By the way, a couple of things from what you just said. One, I always talk about how Ontario wine is so much better now than it was 20 years ago because it took time and experience. And just hearing you and about mistakes made by Derek or by the Leleys, and then you learn from the mistakes, and then you get smarter, and that plot is Syrah, and that plot is not. One of the other things is I kind of feel bad for Donna and David, because when they sold it, a lot of people were angry, but it's because we feel this connection with the wines and the soil and the land. So we get overly emotional, even though it's not our land. It's their decision to make. But we're always like, hey, what are you doing? I'd love to actually, you know what? Do you want to try one of, I should tell people, by the way, this is being recorded on June 28th. So when this is released, some of the Lely wines will already be released. And we're starting with, and we're in the tasting room here at the vineyard. We're starting with the sparkling. Is that the first one?
That's coming from Stonebridge Vineyard. This is our natural brut wine. So there's no dosage in it. And this is something we have 11,000 bottles of that. Mm-hmm. Our ambition is disgorge maybe 400 to 500 every other year.
Yeah.
And we think that this is going to be our flagship sparkling in 10, 15 years' time. And we'll be keeping the journey. I don't know whether we'll always do...
Just big in the mid. You know, just what a... I mean, it's always... It's a stereotypical line to say, but the frothy mousse thing in the middle. And just a really fruity finish on this guy. This is a pretty serious sparkling.
The year was wonderful when we start pulling early in the season, 2020, and it is coming mainly from four clonal choice that we made at the Chardonnay block. Mm-hmm. All of them are French clones. We did not use one of them, Tropical 548, but the 95, 96, 76 are in it.
Very pretty. Like, this is a really... This is a nice mix of pretty and intense. Like, there's this very pretty berry fruit thing going on, but there's a long finish. As I said, I love the mousse in the middle.
I think over the years, we'll be tasting the toast and the yeast, the biscuit flavors will come into the picture.
Yeah.
This is still a very young traditional method wine, 2020. That's why we only disgorged 40 cases of it. We want to create like a benchmark starting from this year. There is a couple other sparklings. We had a rosé version of this. In fact, that is we created later on as a tribute to Lely family. We used one of the reds from this property together with a Stonebridge white. And that's we said that that's the only cross-vineyard blend we will do.
Oh, okay. But beyond that, keep the Stonebridge one and the Lely one. And we'll get to that because I have some questions about just the differences between the Stonebridge vineyard and the Lely vineyard. I want to read this quote. When we bought the winery, there was no wine inventory from the past except a couple of ice wines dating back to 2015, which are wonderful. No question about that. But literally nothing else. So we need 4 to 5 years to put good Lely wines back on the shelves. So I'm curious, what was the state of the vineyards when you purchased it? And I know it's only been a couple years, but how different is it now versus then?
That quote is, that's what's hurting us most. A winery without a library. Mm-hmm. There are wonderful wines, and we are building our library in a very, very interesting way. Some of old customers showing up with Lely wines, and we're trading another new wine with them, saying that we would love to keep one or two.
Right.
But it is not really a library. It's not like a 10 cases. Mm-hmm. Once you open the bottle, that's the end of the story. But still, it will be nice. I mean, the intermediate management, they run a very successful ice wine business in BC, and I think they wanted to crown that business with a Niagara ice wine location.
Yeah.
Looking at their numbers, they did a wonderful job dollar-wise. My humble view is they did not do any good job, or they didn't focus to keep this land as a custodian. I mean, I believe that you'll never own a land. Land owns you. You're the custodian. You take good care of it. Hope that somebody in your family or somebody as passionate as you show up.
Right.
To take over. Pass the baton. I mean, the winery was geared towards... they also bought 3 other properties in the area. They moved the production to a large warehouse. Their press was the largest press I ever seen in my life, and I saw a lot of presses and a lot of wineries.
Really?
They were doing things at mass, and they were exporting in bulk. When we took over, there was a piece of inventory that wasn't to my taste, 120 tons of ice wine in bulk. Oh my God, like if you think, imagine the ice wines we have, if we put them into bulk, I think it's going to be some like 4 tons kind of thing.
Jesus. Listen.
And they took it. I mean, they said, that's fine. We'll always take it off the shelf because we could always sell it. And I was so happy.
And both things can be true. If, you know, the goal is you want to make money and everyone's got a mortgage and rent and you got kids and you got to put them through school. I'm nothing against about making money, nothing against capitalism. That is fine. But the other side is, if you want to make quality wine, you're not going to make a ton of money. You know, I say it all the time. All these wine owners I know in Niagara, they don't own a fleet of Porsches because the profit margin is slim. And to make good wine takes time and it takes investment.
So what we did is that wine went away. So the only ice wine we kept is 2015, which is coming from, I mean, that was psychologically important for us. Donna and Derek started the process and the new owners just bottled it. So we said that, okay, we'll consider that one is coming from the original lady.
Yeah.
And we sold all the equipments. All of it that we inherited, they were geared towards large batch production.
Yeah.
Now our press is could take 4 tons at max. Ideal size is 2 tons of grape we're talking about.
And how much could those old ones do?
I think that was a 15-ton press.
Like 4 times the size. Okay. I mean, yeah.
That was something else. I mean, their destemmer was 10 tons per hour. I mean, that was a different game. Kudos to them. They made some money out of it.
Yeah.
I wish they said, okay, we have 3 properties. Layla stay as is. The other 2 properties will just produce masses kind of thing.
Right.
What we did is the year we purchased it, deal was closed on 26th of October, and they didn't pull any grapes. In the while we're doing the due diligence, we had a temporary agreement. We start taking care of the vineyard with the hope that deal will close and we'll make some wine out of it. So we had a rescue harvest that year.
Rescue harvest.
So first team went and dropped things that definitely shouldn't be considered.
Yeah.
We thought that the second team will go and make a full harvest. It didn't. They also picked. So I think we picked 1/3 of what could be taken. No Pinot survived, obviously. There were left too much time on the wines. So we did a lot of rosés, lemons and lemonade analogy. All the reds become micro cuvée rosés. We had single variety Pinot Noir rosé, single variety Cab Franc rosé, and Zweigelt stayed. I mean, Zweigelt was in an excellent condition. To everyone's surprise, that was my first interaction with Zweigelt, and it's kind of a flagship, interesting small wine in the Niagara as well. Best to my knowledge, there are 3 other small plots, and the other day Donna told me that it was a completely coincidence that they planted. They ordered something, order came wrong, and there was Zweigelt in it.
Really?
They said that, shall we just return it, left the plot open or not? They said, let's plant it. It could be interesting. And over the years, there's a big following. I mean, when we released our Zweigelt, people showed up. 1/3 of the small batch sold in the first 2 weeks. People remembering Lady Zweigelt from the past.
Mm-hmm. And we'll get to the Zweigelt in a second. But we have the 2019... Is this the Stonebridge 19 Chardonnay Reserve?
No, this is our estate plan. For us, reserve is a barrel select rather than specific plots that we call it reserve.
Yeah, and the reason I ask is because, again, congratulations. Your 2019 Stonebridge Chardonnay Reserve East won the gold medal at the Chardonnay du Monde wine competition held in Burgundy. So congratulations
there,
Matt. Thank you. So as we talk about, as we sip through this Chardonnay, I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit just about the portfolio and the philosophy for Stonebridge.
We produce wine with little to no intervention. That was our philosophy in the vineyard. So that means we do a lot of work on the winery, a lot of work on the vineyard. Our typical crop levels is 1 kilo per plant. That corresponds to 1 ton per acre. I have 2 neighbors, and they think that I'm crazy because they're pulling 5 to 7 tons per acre.
So they're 5 to 7 tons per acre. You're 1, so you're doing 1/5, 1/6. So it's still the same amount of work as your neighbors, same amount of man hours and investment.
And in fact, more, because wines want to produce more.
Right.
We go and thin the shoots.
Thin it.
so pull just, the leaves.
So just the best grapes are being used. That's a tiny amount.
Tiny amount. I mean, this 2019 bunches were 950 kilos per acre. It was even less than what we anticipated. And I think this was a textbook year for whites in Niagara. Everything cooperated. And they went into French oak barrels. One third was new, then one third was used once and used multiple times. And the new barrels were all puncheons. So the oak content, we never wanted to see too much oak content in it, and puncheons allowed that. The yeast was coming from, I mean, it is a 45 row block with 10 feet between them, 9 feet between them, if you could imagine, 150 meters wide. It's a very, very small block, but for some reason, east side and west side, even though they have the same soil structure, always produces slightly different wine. And it's not always east is better than west. Our 2017 reserve is coming from west side, which is a wonderful wine as well. And these are all what the nature gave us. I mean, we didn't do anything on the vineyard. These are barrels. We only play with the heat of the environment just to make sure that they don't go into fast fermentation. These are fermentations took close to 6 to 7 weeks. Then they stayed on the same barrels for 23 months.
On the Chardonnay, it is a big, serious nose. The interesting thing for me is on the palate, it was a little bit lighter. I was expecting bigger. The nose is big. The palate is a little bit more, it's a little bit more mild, a little bit more acidic, a little bit of this cooked orange, if that makes sense. But the biscuity notes, I just, with a lot of, and a lot of orange, the linger is there. It's been about 15 seconds since I've had a sip, and I'm still kind of processing what's going on.
I think the long finish is the trademark of this vintage. You will see, if you have time, maybe you could taste the other two, the East and West Reserve. They all carry the same flavor. And the beauty of this wine is, this is the first wine the sales team fall in love with. Because there's a lot of people showing up saying, I don't like Chardonnay.
It's the worst when someone says
that. I don't like oak Chardonnay.
Yeah.
And we keep saying, we try not to use the word oaked. Sitting on an oak barrel is different than oaked. I think California large producers teach us a pretty bad lesson in training. They oak the Chardonnay sometimes. And the beauty is, they say that, okay, I mean, this is the only one we have. Because they were shocked saying that, are we going to sell one type of Chardonnay? Mm-hmm. I'm talking about last year. And it is oaked. And how are you going to explain? So we start offering this wine on the tasting menu. We said that, okay, you're tasting four. Give it a chance. And many people start walking out with a bottle, two bottles. And the beauty is they start coming back. People who think they don't like Chardonnay thinks this is not the Chardonnay that they are thinking about.
Yeah.
I believe this is a pretty well put together package when it comes to balance between alcohol, fruit, acidity, and sugar level. And all of our wines are wild fermented. This is no exception. We don't interfere with the process. There's no yeast in it. All of our wines are vegan because we don't deal with pesticides on the field, so we don't have to use any filtering agents that are non-vegan, I should say. And most of our wines are either bone dry or very close to that level, because we don't interfere on the fermentation process as well with other chemicals.
Now, it's, as someone who loves Chardonnay, that's fantastic. I think it's always a fashionable thing to say. If you don't know much about wine, you just want to proclaim, oh no, I don't drink Chardonnay. I'm like, I never understand when someone says that, considering there's 1,000 different expressions of that grape. It's one thing we do really well. Yeah. I think it's if you're going to do the calling card of Niagara, I don't even think of ice wine anymore. And it's nothing against ice wine. Ice wine's delicious. But I think of Chardonnay, I think of Pinot. I think of Gamay. You know, those are sort of the three main ones I think about.
I would add Cab Franc as well.
Hey, Cab Franc, thank you.
Then
yes,
it
sorry,
becomes
yes.
for. I mean, I think if.
Yes.
We were invaded by French and imposed AOC rules, most probably they will restrict us to that four categories, saying that you're doing wonderful on these ones, they should be your flagship.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're absolutely right about the Cab Franc.
Cab Sauvignon is as well nice, but as you pointed out at the very early on, there are years they behave horribly.
Yeah, and it's hard to do. It's absolutely hard to do. So what's the story behind the next one we're doing is we're going back to Lely for a second with the rosé. This isn't one of the rescue rosés.
This is one of the rosés. And this is the one 100% Cab Sauvignon.
Yeah. I don't remember the last time.
So most probably the Cab Sauvignon you remember from Lely is coming from the same block because there's only one Cab Sauvignon block at Lely.
Yep.
We picked them on October 26th. What we did is we used a Sanier method for this. So the grapes crashed each other. Mm-hmm. The juice, whatever juice came out from it, and we left it on that process for 3 days. But the skin contact is obviously not 3 days. The maybe first 30% of the juice came on day one with lighter color, supported by following.
I get like watermelon, a little bit of which is something I always get in a lot of the rosés that I like. Watermelon, some lime, a little lemon, good body. But my brain is just trying to assess because I don't remember, you know, most of the time when I have rosé, it's certainly not from 100% Ontario Cabernet Sauvignon fruit.
They spent 3 months in oak barrels. They were all multi-use oak, so we didn't want to have impact of oak on the rosés.
Oh, that's lovely. So let's talk about the Zweigelt for a second. I got to learn about Zweigelt when I was doing a wine tour in Austria and then in Germany, and most of the Zweigelt that I've been exposed to at the LCBO, there's not much of it.
Yeah.
And it was all kind of, I don't want to say bland, but it didn't really grab my attention until I went to, you know, Austria and then tried some of the really good stuff. Is it a hard wine to sell, or is it one that you make only a small amount and the people that are loyal to you guys are always going to come and snap it up?
It's a small batch, like everything else, except then two batches of wine we have. We typically produce 200 cases on average. There are batches that only 60 cases, and Zweigelt was 165 cases. Mm-hmm. I think the name and the legacy sells itself.
Yeah.
We already sold half of the batch that we produce. And it's all people showing up saying that, oh, we heard that you have Zweigelt. We also offer them on the tasting bar. The way we explain is not we explain Zweigelt. We explain when it was planted, what it meant to Lely at the time. They always produce Zweigelt as a single variety. They never blend it into other reds.
Just let it stand on its own.
Yeah.
A little bit of smoke, spicy, fresh red fruit driven. On a blind tasting, I would first jump at Beaujolais. That'd be the first place I would go. I'd be wrong, but that would be the first place that I would go on this fella. Red fruit, nice, fresh, refreshing.
Yeah.
And when I say nice and refreshing, sometimes that's code for simple. And it's not. Mm. I mean, clearly you can sit there and go through the different red and dark fruit notes that you're getting. But I would say this is like just, and it's, by the way, something hard to do. Well-made, refreshing wines that deceive you as simple, but they stick around. That's kind of what I'm getting with this Zweigelt.
I mean, Anne Spern spent a lot of time in this one because legacy has weight, comes with it. You can't really mess up your first Lely Red, which people remember. Maybe Cab Sauvignon, they would remember good days, bad days, but anybody who showed up for this wine, they always have fond memories. And the common thing we are getting from the customers, oh, I could drink this all day.
Yes.
There's not heaviness to it.
Yeah.
Alcohol is slightly low on this one.
What's alcohol?
12.5 compared to the others. So maybe this is the wine. I mean, what we are doing is Donna suggested that the location of Zweigelt is not correct. It should move to the front part, which we call Brickyard. It has lots of depth. It's a very good grape to resist frost. and we have a lot of frost in the front part, and we have a lot of humidity because we are next to the Niagara River. Every morning we have mist coming in. We have a small artificial rain effectively every night. So she thinks that hindsight, instead of planting on the back, which is more dry, it should come to the front.
Oh, interesting. I mean, again, I always love that kind of stuff because I always like to ask, why does this wine smell like this, taste like this? And sometimes it's about the vines being 700 meters in a different spot. And people need to know, the vineyard at the front, if you stood in the vines and then walked for maybe 2 minutes, you're going to walk into the river.
Yes.
You're going to be the Niagara River. As we move on to the cab, I was wondering if you could just tell people a little bit about, because we've been saying the names Anne Sperling and Peter Gamble. Just your own thoughts about them. What makes them such wonderful winemakers?
Number one is they're born with it. You can't give anybody a new nose and sensory skills. Obviously, they have it. And they've been on very interesting projects. Both are very experienced in Niagara and at the same time outside of Niagara. They advise multiple projects in Nova Scotia, Argentina, and they bring a lot of skills. And Peter's, what I see is when Peter works with the barrels, trying to decide what goes where, is it going to be that 5 barrel we are using? And it's amazing he uses percentages of barrels to blend into the wine. So when you have 8 barrels and he goes 10% of this, 100% of those 4 barrels, and I don't want that one, that has to stay.
Right.
But I'm going to blend it with next year's something in 5%. That is amazing. And on his mind, he knows
beautiful
our
wine. Kind of thing.
And it's not the barrels he knows. He knows it from the field. So when he first sees the grapes, he starts building on his mind what to do. And we have 2 wines, literally, he created from nowhere. One of them is the field blend, not on this lineup. It was a bad year last year. Certain blocks didn't perform. He walked with a crew and literally pick grapes by pointing, that comes. It become a wonderful wine. And it's not the first time he did that magic. He did that with a Sauvignon Blanc we have, which we are very proud of, while we're harvesting a Merlot, and he saw our neighbor's block, which wasn't picked due to bird damage. It was abandoned, and a Sauvignon Blanc on October in Niagara. So it's gone.
Wait, hold on. He found Sauvignon Blanc that looked like it had been abandoned, and he turned it into a wine?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
And he called me. We walk. We just start eating berries here and there. We called the owner, saying that, could we harvest? He said that, by all means.
Really?
So that was the most extensive.
He's like brought it back to life. It's like when you put the paddles on someone's chest and you go clear, and that's crazy.
Yeah.
Ah, you know what? That's a perfect story about why Peter's a good winemaker.
Yeah.
I love that. I mean, it's one thing to work with the best of the best, but it's another thing to be a great winemaker to work with bad and turn it into something good. That's a great story. All right, the Stonebridge Cabernet Sauvignon. And going back to my experience at Lely many, many, many years ago, and I'm still studying, it was one of the first times I got to see what microclimate looks like up close, because I asked, why is it over there is good for the Cabernet? And one thing that was explained to me was it was a certain dip, and it protected the grapes from some of the wind. So then where those grapes are in that exact spot, the temperature would be a degree or two warmer than, if your other area is more exposed to the wind. And that little bit of geography change can make a big difference when it comes to Cabernet.
The story of Stonebridge land is it's on the literally in the middle of Niagara on the Lake, Line 5, Concession 5.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it has absolutely no protection. Either we get very wonderful wine.
Yeah.
It's the hottest point in the summer.
Yeah.
It is the coldest spot in the winter. Either we are destroyed or we get something wonderful, which kind of works for me. I mean, instead of having every year something 80%, I rather have 200% followed by 2 or 3 0%.
Matt, you're a brave man. You're a brave man. Yeah. Do you ever get angry going, look at them in Napa? Every year it's warm. This year I got to deal with, I got to deal with something horrible. So tell me a little more about the Cabernet. About what are you getting on the nose, on the palate, on for your Stonebridge? Because I mean, 2020 obviously was a warmer year. Was a very warm year.
It's a warm year. I think we'll all remember 2020 as the excellent harvest for reds. I would say it still carries a cold climate Cabernet flavors. It's not one thing you will get from Spain or...
Spain, Sonoma, Napa, you are not... on first smell, you are not going... It's hard to go New World.
Yeah.
100%. I would absolutely.
So the red fruit is not the only dominant factor. You could still get the perfumed smells of maybe unripe fruit as well as the ripe fruit.
A lot of the classic things, the cedar, the cassis, the chocolate. Like, there's a reason why those notes get used so often when you when you're looking through a wine catalog. All there at the end. I think I would be calling. I think I'd be calling Bordeaux. Like on a blind. I mean, maybe some really cool climate, New World. But yeah, no, there's nothing about this that screams hot Cabernet.
So the next one is interesting. Next one is the Merlot we were harvesting while Peter found the Sauvignon Blanc.
Okay, yeah.
So we're very passionate about that one. We follow that one through its production development cycle, and we thought that we were going to make a good wine, and I think it turned out to be a very nice Merlot.
Merlot, we did something different. It is this
was fermented in puncheons, so we took out the head of the puncheons, turned sideways, so the grape after destemming went into those puncheons and fermentation started and almost complete on those puncheons. Then we took it out and juice went back into the same barrel. So the same barrel is responsible for fermentation and aging.
Yeah.
For this one.
How rare is that?
I mean, it is, I think, very rare. Because we need to call, there's only one good cooper we have in the Niagara. When he retires, we are all in trouble. So you could ask him, is anybody else did this one very recently? It is not unknown, but doing it at 500 liter vessels is a lot of work compared to putting it in a 3-ton vessel and doing it at once.
Of the portfolio, my favorite before this was the Chardonnay. Now, that's a fantastic Merlot. That is an excellent, which kind of goes to my next question. I haven't asked what the prices are of this. And it's been a common theme on a lot of my Ontario-based podcasts on trying to convince the listeners. It's okay, like, not for your Tuesday night wine, but it's okay to invest 40, 50, and higher for Ontario and Canadian wine. And we need to get over the idea that if I'm going to be spending $100 on a bottle, it can only come from France or Italy or California. How hard is it to market it? Let's start here. I was wondering if you could just explain to people why some of these wines, some of your wines, are going to be around $100. I want to just explain again the manpower and the time that goes into this.
I mean, compared to the wines marketed at, sold at $20 range.
Yeah.
Our average is $48.
Mm-hmm. For Stonebridge, for Lely, for both? I should say both.
We don't have that many Lely to change the numbers yet.
Of course.
And our reserves are around $78. Mm-hmm. So what goes into that price is, we start, I think, digging into at the early minutes. We take something around 1 kilo compared to 5, 6, 7s. So it's the same amount of land, same amount of work to start with. And towards the end of the season, it's more and more work because we are trying to get the best fruit. Mm-hmm. And it goes into small vessels. The batch is 150 cases to 200 cases. And the cost of winemaking, compared to 2,000 cases, exactly the same. You have to pay more attention to these barrels, and the barrels are expensive. We are trying to produce a wine that could age as well as approachable in the following 4 or 5 years. And typically we keep our wines in 24 months, sometimes 36 months in barrel instead of 9 months, which means that we have to invest more into barrels to keep them on the cellar. Small things like cork. Yep. If you want to keep them for 20 years, it used to be a slightly expensive cork compared to wines that are due to be consumed in the following 9 months. These all contribute, and also you need to keep them, I mean, carry them for multiple years.
Right.
It is a very tough sell. I can't say it's easy if you are not face-to-face with a customer.
Yeah.
So when we publish something on internet saying that, hey, we have a new release, okay, people who never met us, and at the same time, if they never been to wine country or tasted higher-end Ontario wines, thinking that if I'm paying this much money, that's a very typical thing. I could buy a French. Mm-hmm. We keep saying that if we are face-to-face, you're comparing a specific wine, Stonebridge or Lely, with a French. What do you mean a French? I mean, yeah, you could buy a Ontario wine for that price. I mean, there's no big secret. There's a spectrum. There are $15 wines. There are $100 wines. I mean, you could just pick and watch. If we're face-to-face with a customer, it's an easy call. What they see initially is your prices may be high, but on the tasting menu, that's not expensive. We are charging like everybody else.
Yeah.
So they have a chance to taste these $78 wines with a price of $25, four of them. And if they want to taste fifth of them, we never make an issue. They could taste fifth. And they change their mind. Then they buy. Also, we're an old winery coming from Lely Heritage, but we're a new winery because we just put new wines in it. So the ratings help. Experts saying that this is at par with something. Chardonnay du Monde was a big, big boost to us. People saw that we could go to France and compete with French wines and come out at the top.
It's such a big deal. And it's sometimes... But it's just the way of life. It's the same way how California with the judgment in 1977, I forget the year, I apologize, and how and you know they made a movie on it, Bottle Shock, and how that helped boost California. And it's kind of the same story around the world. I've been in wineries all over the world, and almost all of them have a story of the time their New Zealand Pinot from Martinborough went up against Chibatin, and they won, and how much it helped their business. It's this kind of thing with the new world, and it's the same thing with Canada, and it's something I discovered about a decade or so ago about how especially a lot of Chardonnays and Pinots can compete, and they can, and I think it's important. I guess the hardest thing for you is, I guess it's easier to sell these wines when you're here, as you said, face-to-face. It's finding a way where your 2020 Stonebridge Merlot at a restaurant, they're going to at least double the price. Mm-hmm. That's just restaurants. That's the markup. Where you could convince a Canadian, oh, I'll spend $200 at a restaurant on this Ontario Merlot, and just to make that normal.
Yeah. That's a tough one. I mean, you said that you have a WSET diploma.
Yes.
And you know that there's not too many of you around. So I think the industry as a whole growing. We need like people. I completed my WSET 3, which is nothing compared to 4.
Still, good on you. Got the advantage.
So, but I think the methodology is the same. The system teaches blind tasting. Mm-hmm. Take a glass of wine, compare on its merit rather than its label or origin or who produces it. Just tell me on 20 categories, what it is.
Yeah.
And is it effectively you come up with a ranking, and if there are 4 in front of you, you could rank them. I'll pay more to this, a little bit less to that, a little bit less to that. I think if we had those kind of ratings more and more, and we are, people like you writing on the magazines and etc., that will give some confidence to the consumer. Yeah, I could pay the extra $15, $20 than my budget, but I'm getting something special. And that's been vetted by somebody else kind of thing. Because people were tasting the wine and not trusting themselves. After the Chardonnay du Monde, we start selling in bundles of 6 and 12. Before it was 1. They were tasting it, liking it, but can't really make that last push.
You know what it is? You know what it, these sort of competitions? It almost gives people permission to spend that amount of money on an Ontario wine. They'll do it on their Montrachet, but they're not going to do it on their Niagara. Yeah. And then they see this, it's like it almost gives them permission. Oh, okay, wait a minute. I can do it because these wines, you know, the aromatics, the taste profile, you know, they're sometimes on par with what you get in Burgundy. Before we end this, actually, I want to go back to you for a second. That's where we've been getting all technical and stuff. When did you first fall in love with wine? Like, was this something when you were a child? Was it in your 20s, your 30s? Was there a moment when you just fell in love with it?
That I remember very well. I was working as a management consultant in London, UK. Mm-hmm. We finished the project. Given that it was my second project, I should be 5 years old. So not much experience with wine. I had lots of wine, but the price was the major criteria. Like, we go for £8, £10, which at Marks & Spencer at those times, get you something decent so you don't die.
Yep.
You get a different flavor, but not necessarily nice. And the company was encouraging their employees to learn ways to entertain and host meetings when they become experienced, senior ranks. So one of the options was signing up a wine club, and I gone through that, and I thought that I know everything. I could just pick a Chilean wine on the rank kind of thing. And after a project, we went to a very expensive restaurant. We finished the project, and the partner said that, you guys did a good job. Why don't you pick a wine, any wine you want, money is no issue. The place was La Gavroche. It now become a restaurant that money can't buy. It was very expensive.
Yeah.
And we picked a wine, and the partner yawned in front of us. Guys, come on. I mean, you could pick something nice. We pick a second one, so that you're getting worse. And it became a 10-minute activity. We were picking something, and he was telling us why we are wasting this opportunity. Because he said, just pick anything you want. And there were a couple $1,000 pound bottles at those times.
Oof.
And we were being polite. We were going after 200, 300. Then he said that, okay, I understand. Let me just pick you. He picked a Sémillon. And it wasn't that expensive. Maybe 200-pound thing. And it was the amazing wine I had. And the sommelier, he asked the sommelier to spend a little bit of time with us. So it became more of a job rather than an entertainment. And he explained the Cab Franc being the backbone, touch of Merlot. And that's the first time I said, oh my God, there's a different world. And I'm still on my reds. We haven't tried yet because some of the blocks needs to be matured a little bit more. So my aim is on Chardonnay. I think what I did, I'm happy. I'm going to build on it. On Reds, I want this Merlot being backbone, Cab Franc and Sauvignon playing a little role, mm-hmm. simulating something like a Pomerol is still a passion in me. So that was the time that I think it's the first time I remember wine.
So a nice right bank Bordeaux at a beautiful restaurant in London, and then that gets you down the path to where we are now. And you know, the Merlot is fantastic. I retried the Cabernet when you were telling that story. I think it needed just a little bit more time to open up. Much more impressive after it had about another 5, 6, 7 minutes in the glass. But Matt, I really appreciate you doing this. First, before anything else, tell people websites. Where can they go? Where can they find Lely? Where can they find Stonebridge?
I mean, because of our Ontario's regulations, there's no reseller except than LCBO, and LCBO sells what LCBO chooses.
Yes.
And our $70, and especially the batch size of 150 is no option. Mm-hmm. So we only sell at Lely Winery mm-hmm. if they are ever driving Niagara on the Lake. Or our website, lelywines.com, is the only agency or outlet we have to the world. And I really encourage and beg for the industry, people to go to our websites. I mean, if they go into places like Ontario Craft Winery or Wineries of Ontario, it gives the inventory of who we are there. There are lovely wineries that could only sell on their web or on their shop.
Yep.
And there's a whole different world than LCBO shops, Ontario section.
Matt, this has been great. I'm super excited. I'm excited to get Lely back in my life. I'm excited to continue to try the wines of Stonebridge because I know the people behind it are incredibly talented, and they take dead Sauvignon Blanc and turn it into good wines. I love that story. Matt, really appreciate it. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remind me, you can find me, I was going to say Stitcher. Stitcher's not going to be around much longer, but Spotify, iTunes, and wherever quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.